Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Strantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We're here live at Rogers Arena on a Canucks game. David, of course, also always live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drancer back on the show today after taking the long weekend. What's going on, man?
Not much, buddy. I enjoyed a long weekend off. Went to the island, did some storm chasing with the puppy and some friends. It was a lovely time. And look, all part of my effort. I'm trying to be a little bit more balanced as a human being these days.
Sure.
And we'll see if it pays off at the pointy end of the season. You know, it's all about the playoffs for me this
year. That's right.
I'm trying to
learn about how to. You hadn't covered a playoff team in a while.
I hadn't, and I'm trying to take the lessons from last year and apply them a little bit differently. I want to be at tip-top form. Yep. When the games really matter down the stretch and in the postseason. So I'm taking a different tack. That's why I took the long weekend.
We're all trying to pace ourselves,
including maybe the Canucks, based on what we saw on Saturday.
Well, I don't know if they were trying to pace themselves, but maybe it had the effect of pacing themselves.
If they were trying to pace themselves, stop trying to pace yourself. Never mind.
All right, we got a lot to get into today. As I mentioned, it is a Canucks game day. They host the Calgary Flames again here, looking for some revenge from that night one loss back in October. So we'll talk to Pat Steinberg from Sportsnet 960 in Calgary at 12:30. Kevin Woodley, always a pleasure to have Woodley. He'll join us live in the broadcast booth here at Rogers Arena at 1 o'clock. And lots to get into as we look ahead to the Flames game tonight. So let's go straight to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 12th. The Canucks, starting with the headlines, taking on the Calgary Flames at Rogers Arena. And as I mentioned, there's, you know, it's a divisional rival. There's the revenge factor after the Canucks blew that lead on night one of the season here at Rogers Arena. But the big news, of course, Dranser, is that Jonathan Lekkomäki, organization's top prospect, set to make his NHL debut tonight. Not just his NHL debut, but also playing alongside JT Miller, it looks like. We didn't get a chance to see it morning skate today, but based on where he's practiced the last couple of days.
Well, and Rick Tocchet explained following practice on Monday that, you know, he kind of walked the media through his thought process in rejigging his top six and putting Lekkomäki up with JT Miller. And honestly, what I took from it is, A, Pew Suter is highly trusted defensively. Okay, because that's part of the logic here, right? You put DeBrusk with Pettersson and Garland, and you put Suter to chase around the rookie with a pooper scooper and make sure that everything stays as clean as possible. I think that's a good fit. And then, you know, talk it spoken at length about wanting Lekkomäki to simplify, you know, not to defer to veteran players, to just shoot the puck. So you put him with JT Miller, who's going to hopefully lead on retrievals and some forechecking work, get the puck and then make a quick pass to Lekkomäki in space and just shoot the puck. So I think it's keep it simple, and we'll get you some defensive help on the wings. That seems to be the logic of how the Canucks have approached this from a lineup perspective. And, you know, it's an excellent opportunity for Lekkomäki. And let's be real. It's a crucial opportunity for the Canucks. The Canucks need, in some ways, I think a shot in the arm at the top of the lineup. Like, they kind of need another difference maker here, given how JT Miller and Elias Pettersson have kind of run in the early going this season. You know, this team is good enough and has enough of a margin for error that if JT Miller is not driving at quite the same level that he did last season, which isn't to say he's performing badly, just that he hasn't been at the same caliber of impact player that he was last season, which, granted, a high bar,
was
right?
He's extremely impactful.
One of the 10 most impactful forwards in the league last season. You know, he hasn't quite hit that level yet, and obviously Pettersson hasn't hit the level that we've become accustomed to from him either over the course of his entire career in the early going. And that makes it kind of Quinn Hughes versus the world, which is fine most of the time,
yes,
until you bump into McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers,
yep,
and it looks an awful lot different.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting point, too, because, you know, I'm looking at natural stat trick here, and the Canucks have 10 forwards who have played at least 100 minutes at 5-on-5, right? What I would call like their 10 regular forwards. And it's I'll just rattle through them real quick. Garland, Pettersson, Miller, DeBrusk, Hoglander, Bluger, Besser, Heinen, Sherwood, and Suter. Those are the 10 guys who've cleared that 100 minutes threshold at 5-on-5. Players 9 and 10 out of those 10 in terms of points per 60 are JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. And in some ways, it's stunning that the Canucks are where they are in the standings with that being the case, right? With JT Miller and Elias Pettersson being the last and second-to-last rate scorers on the among forwards on the team at even strength. And, you know, part of that is just the depth guys have played really well, obviously, right? The Sherwood, Bluger, Heinen line has done really well. Obviously, Connor Garland, Pugh Suter. But also part of it is, as you said, they just those guys aren't clicking yet, right? And I think it's fair to put Elias Pettersson in a different category, given just how stark the drop-off was going back to last year. But I also think it's fair to at least focus some attention on JT Miller and the production at 5-on-5 at this point as well.
Well, and so what are those actual raw numbers in terms of points per 60?
Points per 60 are so...
Like 1.7...
Yeah, Elias Pettersson's at 1.68, JT Miller's at 1.79. So basically 1.8, yeah. 1.7.
And the way to think about that is that over the last... 3 seasons, not including this one. So mm-hmm. going into this season, right, to be at, you know, 1.7-ish, 1.68, 1.73 sort of puts you as like a low-end second line rate scorer, mm-hmm. right? You're like, that's the area for the Thomas Tatars and James Van Riemsdyk and mm-hmm. you know, David Perrons and Frank Vetranos of the world. And those are all good players, all guys who can help a team win. But our expectations are a little bit different.
So much higher for those guys.
When it comes to Pettersson and Miller, and not for no reason. I mean, if you look at where Miller and Pettersson, for example, rank going into the season across the last 3 years, Pettersson at 2.4 mm-hmm. points per 60, so a fairly sizable drop-off there, and Miller at 2.26.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of relative to our expectations. And look, we live in this world, and we talk about this all the time. In a world where save percentage is trending to be south of 900 on average in the league this year,
mm-hmm.
shot creators, high-end finishers have a bigger impact on the outcomes of games, right? You're seeing it in the league right now. Like, Kirill Kaprizov is having very much, like, doesn't Kirill Kaprizov's season feel very much like NBA first-team all-star on a team that doesn't have a lot of other,
yep.
and everyone's like, well, where's their second option? Right? It's like Kaprizov and Zuccarello, but Kaprizov's so good, so clearly one of the 5 or 6 most important players in the league this season, that he's able to carry a team in a way that in the past, hockey players, elite hockey players, kind of couldn't. You needed to have the depth. You needed to have the team. You needed to have that structural integrity. You still do, don't get me wrong, but now a star player can carry a team in a way that just wasn't the case in a world where goalies were saving 9.920
mm-hmm.
You know, percent of shots faced. Like, it's just a totally different world in terms of what matters. And so, you know, within that context, a little too much has been on Hughes's shoulders to carry this team, and that's okay in that they're still very good because Quinn Hughes is an elite player,
yep.
You know, who should be getting Hart Trophy consideration based off the first 15 or so games of the season. But to get to that next level, to be the team that's giving really good teams a tough night game in, game out, the Canucks are going to need their other star players to sort of level up. And you know, Demko's return and then Miller and Pettersson getting back to form, that would be the sort of thing that could really raise this team's ceiling above where it's been in the early
going. And we should point out also, you know, JT Miller kind of indirectly referencing that he's playing through something yesterday, right? Saying, you know, he hasn't been as physical, quote, for reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, look, we can all see
it. Well, we all know. But, yeah. And, you know, he's acknowledging it there kind of again, as I said, indirectly.
Well, and I appreciate it. You know, like,
absolutely.
It's good to acknowledge it because it's obvious to anyone who's paying attention. And there's no one served by
pretending it's not happening.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why try to lie to us about it?
Well, and you know, the way he presented it wasn't an excuse, right?
Like, no.
The fact that Miller is this durable, right? The fact that whatever happened in Philadelphia and he couldn't take draws
mm-hmm.
and he misses the practice in Chicago, but he still plays against the Blackhawks and doesn't really take faceoffs in that game. I mean, that speaks to how competitive and tough this guy is. He mm-hmm. doesn't miss games even when he's hurt, and with his style of play. You know, you can look through Miller's track record and be like, he's missed six games for the Canucks, and most of them were during, you know, for COVID reasons, right? Like, or rest at the end of last season. You know, the fact is that he's played probably 100-plus games for the Canucks, well under 100%. So it's a credit to him that he's out there. But, you know, we do have to sort of account for it in our analysis of where this team's at and where they're trending.
And, you know, just to bring it back to Jonathan Lekkomäki and making his NHL debut, and as you said, you know, and I think the context of where Elias Pettersson and JT Miller's games are at right now is one of the reasons, plus Brock Besser's absence, why it does look like the team could really use a spark in the top six. And I don't think anyone's expecting Lekkomäki to come in and be that kind of, you know, superstar who can carry a team in his rookie season at his age. But can you have at least some of that game-breaking ability? Some of those, you know, because that's why he's here at this young of an age, right? Is because his shot is a legitimate weapon, right? He's not going to be an all-star caliber player, but can there be those moments where, hey, the puck is on your stick, let it rip, try to break the game open? And I think that's why it's really important. The Tocchet's message yesterday to Lekkomäki was pretty simple. It was, hey, you're a shooter, Miller's going to pass you the puck, let it rip. Don't defer, just do your thing, and that's shoot the puck.
Yeah, an all-star level expectation's probably too high, but can help your top six score.
Yeah.
I think that's a reasonable bar given what he accomplished in the SHL last season, given the fact that he was the MVP of the World Juniors,
mm-hmm.
and given what we saw from him, frankly, in training camp through some of the preseason, not all of it, right? Because he didn't really maintain that level that he hit in the early part of the preseason. And frankly, his stupendous performance through seven games in the American League, too, where he's been thoroughly dominant. So, you know, I'm excited to see what Lekkomäki can bring. Obviously, we'll keep our expectations somewhat in check, but it would be a huge development for this team if they were able to get, you know, another, like, competent middle sixth contributor type impact from him. You know, not just right off the hop, but, like, over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and certainly develop it to, you know, where he's gaining more trust and you feel you can play him more minutes and all of that.
Do you think this is likely to be a one-game look given Dakota Joshua's return seems imminent?
I don't think it's guaranteed to be a one-game look. Now, the complicating factor is with Pius Suter seeming to find a home on the wing in the top six, it makes it harder to take Atu Ratu out, right, because you need those four centers. Because that would be the other kind of option, right? Okay, so Joshua comes in, moves to the wing. You move Lekkomäki down maybe in the lineup, but then Ratu's the one coming out. I don't know.
I don't think you're going to play him on the fourth line, though, and I don't think you're going to separate that third line. So he's really going to need to play in the top six. I think he's going to get a run. The organization's very excited about what he can contribute, is sort of my understanding when I was reporting over the weekend that he was coming up but that he wasn't going to play on Saturday. So, you know, I'll be very curious to see not just sort of what he does with this opportunity, but what it means if he's able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and if it's not, if he does come out for Joshua on Thursday, I think the other thing is it's setting him up to play. At the very least, he's going to play more games this season, right? Whether it's an immediate run now or he's in and out of the lineup a little bit, but he's going to play more NHL games.
Can we talk a little bit about Saturday? Because I know, I know you did it yesterday, so you've moved on.
Yes.
But I haven't had a chance to talk about it. Sort of two things. Did you talk about the jersey on the ice yesterday?
No, I didn't, actually.
We got to talk about the jersey
on the
ice.
That was wild.
The wisdom of Canucks fans is something that's usually been... you can take it to the bank, right? Like, this is a smart hockey crowd. This is a crowd that shows appreciation for subtle moments. You know, you get a heavy fourth line shift, this building wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been something that, like, just as someone who grew up in this city, I've taken a lot of pride in. Feel like we've had some moments where this crowd's been a little bit off their game. Like, chucking your jersey on the ice because your team got blown out by literally the best true talent team in the league, literally the team with the shortest odds to win the Stanley Cup, when you're 7-3
to fall to 7-3-3. That's the thing.
Come on.
Like,
but between that and the JT Miller chance while Kevin Rooney was lying prone on the ice, like, those are two of the weirdest moments that this market has had in building in a long time. So I'm not criticizing anybody.
The person who threw it on the ice.
Yeah, well, I just want to see Vancouver hockey fans go back to being the best, because I feel like it's been a bit of an inconsistent start to the season. Let's put it that way. They got to get back on track.
Yeah, I mean, at least the jersey on the ice is an individual thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so for sure.
It's harder to hang it on the fan base.
No, I'm still going to do it.
The chant is totally fair.
But that also is, like, you can hear a chant if it's just 500 people.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're hanging that on everybody, we're hanging this on everybody. Come on. Don't cut it that fine.
500 people is a lot different than one.
Here's the other thing I want to point out. One thing we've tracked all season long, right? Like, probably been my number one narrative, my number one sort of obsessive focus when we talk about the Canucks has been their effort to evolve offensively. I think it's shaped a lot of what they did this offseason. I think it's shaped a lot of what we saw at training camp. I think it's shaped a lot of Rick Tocchet's approach. I think it's shaped Patrick Alvin's approach and Jim Rutherford's approach. Mm-hmm. The idea of trying to find a way to generate offense more sustainably so that when the rubber meets the road in the playoffs, you don't have, you know, that stretch that this team had with two opportunities to advance the Western Conference Final where it looked like they needed a bounce or a massive, you know, Ryan McLeod turnover caliber mistake to get a goal against the Oilers. And for the most part this season, even if it's come somewhat at the expense of this team's trademark defensive solidity, Jamie, we've seen a more dynamic attacking version of the Canucks. And then we saw Saturday's game against the Oilers. And look, you score three goals, but you know, there's a deflection. One of them sort of a mean-nothing power play goal late. That was not like three goals worth of goals from the Canucks in terms of what they were able to generate. They had very, very few high-caliber chances, maybe two, the entire game. It was a contest that looked like what it sometimes does. And I'm not saying this is what it is because it's just one game. It could be a one-off. But what it sometimes does when a good team bumps into an elite team in the Stanley Cup playoffs and run out of answers because they can't hit their fastball, it's the first time we've seen the Canucks look like that all season. But I feel like it's something we need to state or mark, A, as sort of a signpost of this club's progress if from an evolve into a more dynamic attacking team perspective, but also because a lot of this was done based on what this team was able to generate when the chips were down against the Oilers in the playoffs, and in their first meeting, it looked a little bit too much like
too similar
those Game 6 and Game 7 performances for my comfort. So just something that we'll have to track as this season goes along, where we're still sort of trending toward the Canucks being a far more robust attacking team than they were last season. But it did feel like yesterday was maybe Saturday's game. Maybe showed us the limits of the progress that Vancouver has made to this point.
Okay, I want to move on to the broadsheet here quickly. And just, I want to touch a little bit on the Brock Besser non-update or seemed like an update but wasn't actually an update from Rick Tocchet yesterday. He used the phrase day-to-day in describing Brock Besser, but then you kind of go back and parse it, and it seemed more he was saying, like,
it's day whether to day or not we'll the update.
Yeah, whether or not we'll give you an update is day to day. And I know Rick Dhaliwal and Donnie and Dolly today saying, you know, quote, most people think Besser could be out for a while. So he's not day to day. It's an upper body injury. Well, and there's just this kind of shroud of secrecy and mystery around the situation now.
So around Tocchet, first of all, had sort of declared Besser out indefinitely the previous day. Right, and really the previous 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. Then on Monday was asked again and said, first of all, this is what's important about understanding sort of the broken telephone. He said he was asked if there was an update on Besser, and he said no. Mm-hmm. And then he added, yeah, it's kind of a day-to-day thing in talking about giving updates. But he'd already said no. So, look, all I'm going to say is...
He asked, do you have an update on Besser? He said no. Then IMAC asked him, are you ever going to give us an update on Besser?
Hilarious, by the way. Today, I asked Rick if he was able to confirm whether Besser was in the protocol.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a bare minimum thing that a team could confirm. And then we can stop asking. You know what I mean? Like, here's the thing. If we understand that a guy's in concussion protocol, we know what the graduated return to play protocol looks like. Mm-hmm. We don't need to ask about it again until Besser is a limited participant in practice. And then we know that the next day, if he practices fully, then the next day he could be cleared. Like, we know what it looks like. It's predictable. But we also know that it's unpredictable if a guy has a brain injury, right? Like, we know that's going to be an uncertain timeline, and it's kind of just dusted away until they're able to return. If it's an upper body injury, we're going to keep asking for updates because an upper body injury implies something different. So,
well, especially when it's upper body injury and there's no timeline, right?
Totally. Yeah. So, look, we'd love to have more info, but I think our primary concern, everyone's primary concern, is just hoping the Besser is all right and is able to get back shortly. You know, I don't know why the club's handling it with this much cloak and dagger. I don't feel like it serves anybody, including Besser here, to sort of be driving confusion and interest around his status when really the primary focus for any Canucks fan, and honestly anyone even covering this team, is just hoping that he's all right and gets back shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's the update from yesterday, kind of on everything that went down with Brock Besser.
Lineup Lankanen?
Yes, lineup. So Lankanen starts. Baines was recalled this morning, right? So,
and Joshua and Juulsen were rinsed. Yeah. So that pretty much tells us that they're going to play the way they practiced the other day, which is Suter, Miller, Lekkerimäki, DeBrusque with Pettersson and Garland, and then the bottom six, no real changes from the game on Saturday except Baines on the fourth line, and then the same defense core that ended that game with that third pair of Brännström, Desharnais.
Yeah, and of course Rick Tocchet yesterday saying Thursday a potential target for Dakota Joshua. He was out working with Noah Juulsen. They're really, I think, the only two skaters on the ice for morning skate. It was beyond optional.
Well, and a couple lineup notes quickly. Obviously, team engaged in some mechanics with like Ty Young coming up so that they had two goalies on the roster so that Shelovs could play in the American League. Nils Åman is not up with the team at the moment, but his waiver clock has reset. Brännström's has expired. He can't go back on waivers in without, you know, the risk of being claimed, and he would be claimed based on how he's performed for the Canucks. I was sort of asking around about a couple subjects that I just want to quickly get into here, and I know we're up against it, so Dom, don't play the walk-off music. But Brännström has obviously opened my eyes. I think his puck moving is indispensable for this team, and yet when I sort of ask about him or talk about him with decision makers in the organization, like, I still think he's got something of an uphill climb here given his size and given the obvious preferences that this team has from a roster construction perspective about what they want their blue line to do. That said, I think there is an internal recognition that if he were to go back on waivers, he would be claimed. And he's absolutely established himself as one of this team's eight defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a tough night against Edmonton, even aside from the one bouncer, which we won't put on him by any means. That's just bad luck off the stanchion. But this sort of does remind us that when you're an undersized, you know, you're not like a mean penalty-killing defensive specialist, and you're not an elite point producer necessarily on the back end, your margin for error is always going to be fine. And I still think Brännström has that to work against, as much as he's opened the eyes of the organization, sees this opportunity, and even won a lot of, I think, plaudits internally for the way that he competes. The other side of this is Shelov's not starting tonight after going down and having a good game in the American League. Team does have a back-to-back this weekend, but things get pretty condensed on this upcoming road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Demko's return appearing to be close-ish, at least. I mean, he looks like he's a fuller participant at practices and stuff. I mean, we're probably within that sort of 2 weeks we're looking at, probably expecting him to play again.
Yeah. 2 weeks would seem... That would be maybe the very early end of it for me, just based on how gradual and it's been.
If he's back at practice, though, fully, like we usually talk about that like 10 days to 2 week kind of window. So, you know, I don't know if our old rule of thumb applies in this case, but let's pretend it does, right? So, you know, Shelov's not playing tonight. I don't know if he'll play against the Islanders. It does kind of feel like going back to Lankanen after the Oilers game is an indication that this team's giving Lankanen that measure of like number one goaltender respect, where you give him a chance to play through his first tough outing in a Canucks jersey. And so, you know, it feels like when Lankanen gets in, probably this weekend with that back-to-back set against Chicago and Nashville, the stakes are going to be really high. The club can carry three goaltenders, but I definitely think, despite that being plan A when they first signed Lankanen, based on what I'm hearing, I don't think the club is by any means married to that anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Especially given that some of how Shelovs has performed would suggest strongly that he might be best served getting reps in the American League at this point and sort of rebuilding his confidence at that
especially
level.
Especially because there's a need for goaltending at the AHL level.
A desperate one, yeah.
Yeah, so they have the back-to-back this weekend, the 16th and the 17th, and they've got another set of back-to-backs on the road, the 26th and the 27th. So the 26th, obviously 2 weeks from now. So I guess to me the question is Demko ready to take one of those two on the back-to-back, the 26th and the 27th? Because if that's the case, then yeah, we could be looking at one more NHL start for Shelovs here before it goes back down to Abbotsford. Betting update for us.
Canucks are heavily favored, minus 240. The Calgary Flames are playing, what, their fifth game in 8 days in five different cities.
Yep.
So this is a tough schedule loss for the Flames and a nice bounce-back spot for a Canucks team that you'd expect to be pretty hungry after they were trounced by the Oilers over the weekend. Over-under is set at 6 with slightly more steam on the under. That's minus 105 to get under 6 goals. I also want to bring this up. Long shot odds, Jonathan Lekkerimäki to win the Calder.
Dan Riccio special.
Hey, no one is running away with it, right?
So yeah.
Riccio brings up an interesting point, which is that Stankoven, you know, only has 13 points. He's leading all rookies in scoring. Michkov's at 12. A lot of power play dependence for Michkov, although he had a fabulous game against the Sharks the other day. Lekkerimäki 100-1 to win the Calder at the moment.
There you go. It starts now.
Yeah,
get in on the ground floor.
Yeah, I mean, I still like the Celebrini long shot bet more, but one to watch for.
All right, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll look ahead to the Canucks opponent tonight, the Calgary Flames. Pat Steinberg from Sportsnet 960 joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 660.